Friends, comrades, welcome to part two of our season 7 preview for Game of Thrones. Part one, we did Daenerys, Tyrion, Cersei, Jaime. We focused on the south. Now we are focusing on the north. Jon, Sansa, Arya, Bran, the White Walkers, the Night's King, the Brotherhood Without Banners. Without wasting any time, let's get right into it. The last time we saw Jon Snow, he was declared King of the North.
The King of the North!
After taking back Winterfell from the Boltons, Jon will now lead the North against the Army of the Dead. The last Northerner to lead the living against the dead was a legendary figure named Azor Ahai. And for hundreds of years, prophecies have foretold his return as the prince that was promised. In part one of our season 7 preview, we made the case for Daenerys Targaryen being Azor Ahai, the prince that was promised. After 6 seasons of conquering with fire and blood, Daenerys may end up being a red herring for the real prince that was promised. While a strong literal case can be made for Daenerys, Jon satisfies the prerequisites for Azor Ahai as well in a more metaphorical sense. According to the prophecy, these are the indicators of the coming of Azor Ahai. After years of speculation, literally decades, it was revealed that Jon Snow's true parents are Lyanna Stark and Rhaegar Targaryen. After defeating Arthur Dayne in combat, Eddard Stark enters the Tower of Joy with Dawn, the ancestral sword of House Dayne, which was forged from a fallen star. He then witnesses the birth of Jon Snow and then the death of his sister, Lyanna. So technically, Jon was born under a bleeding star. We know Jon was reborn in Season 6, Episode 2, Home, so in the case of Jon Snow, he was reborn amidst salt and smoke. George R.R. Martin has described the final blow as a smoking dagger, and his murder left his friends and black brothers in tears. Rhaegar Targaryen initially believed himself to be the prince that was promised, and then he thought it was his son Aegon Targaryen. He always said that Aegon was the Song of Ice and Fire. Since we know that Jon is both Stark and Targaryen, he could be considered the literal Song of Ice and Fire, with Stark being ice and Targaryen being fire. Rhaegar was obsessed with having a third child. With his wife Elia, he had Aegon and Rhaenys, but he always said the dragon needed 3 heads. And his wife Elia could not conceive a third child because she was sickly. But now we know that Rhaegar did have that third child with Lyanna, so Jon would be the third head of the dragon. In the legend of Azor Ahai, the prince that was promised wields a burning sword named Lightbringer against the White Walkers. He forged Lightbringer by stabbing his wife Nissa Nissa in the heart, with her soul combining with the steel of the sword. Similar to Azor Ahai, Jon Snow chooses duty over love. He betrays Ygritte because of his loyalty to the Night's Watch, which indirectly causes her death during the battle at the Wall. This betrayal doesn't lead to him acquiring a legendary burning sword, but in the books, Jon Snow has had dreams where he fights the White Walkers with a red sword burning in his hand. While Melisandre initially believed Stannis to be the prince that was promised, she now believes the Chosen One is Jon Snow, at least in the show. In the books, Melisandre is constantly asking Rolar to show her Azor Ahai in the flames, yet he only shows her Snow, and, you know, you would think she would pick up on that. It's not that subtle. Another interesting indication of the coming of Azor Ahai is the prophecy of the Woods Witch. Now, Aerys Targaryen, the father to Daenerys, otherwise known as the Mad King, and his wife Rhaella Targaryen were never in love. They only stayed together because they were told by a Woods Witch that the prince that was promised would be born to their line. It just really blows my mind that the Mad King was Jon Snow's grandfather. It's so crazy to think about, and, you know, now he's part of the Targaryen line, so if that prophecy is true, Jon fits that prerequisite as well as Daenerys. Now, George R.R. Martin has apparently already told the showrunners who Azor Ahai is, so we may learn his or her identity in Season 7. It could be Jon, it could be Daenerys, it could be both of them. Some people think it even might be Tyrion or Bran. And some psychopaths used to think that it was Ramsay Bolton. Looking at you, Cam. My personal belief is that it's going to be Daenerys Targaryen because she's my favorite character, but if it is Jon Snow, I will not be disappointed because Jon Snow is the fucking man. Regardless of if Jon is the Chosen One, he will have to rally the Southern Houses to his cause, starting with the most important and powerful house, House Targaryen. Now, since his resurrection, Davos has been acting as Jon Snow's de facto Hand of the King. So I think he's going to encourage Jon to meet with the Targaryens and also try and mine the Dragonglass at Dragonstone. Davos previously spent several years as the Hand of the King to Stannis, and he is well aware of the abundance of Dragonglass at Dragonstone. Since Daenerys and the Greyjoys have become allies, I think it's going to be hard for Jon to trust the Targaryens at first, and I think it's going to be hard for Daenerys to trust the Starks. Daenerys always referred to Ned Stark as Robert Baratheon's dog, the usurper's dog, so she has no love for the Starks.
There are still those in the Seven Kingdoms who call me usurper.
Jon Snow obviously has no love for the Greyjoys after Theon betrayed his entire family. I think the one character that is going to unite Stark and Targaryen is Bran Stark. Through the power of his visions, Bran will show Daenerys the threat from beyond the wall. Even with this revelation, Daenerys still may be skeptical of Jon Snow and the Starks. This is where Lyanna and Rhaegar come in. If Bran can prove to Daenerys that Jon Snow is in fact her nephew, a trust can be built between the two houses. Daenerys never met her brother Rhaegar, but she's heard stories from her other brother Viserys and Barristan about the man Rhaegar was, and I think she'll notice the similarities between Jon and the brother that she never met. Jon is her only living relative, and while he may have Targaryen blood, by the laws of Westeros, he may not have the Targaryen name. If Jon Snow trades in the name Snow for Jon Blackfyre or Jon Sand, it would be disappointing, one, because that means he's still a bastard, and two, Jon Snow is just a better name. Thematically, it wouldn't make sense for Jon Snow to go from being one guy's bastard to another guy's bastard. It's just non-essential storytelling. Nobody living knows if Lyanna and Rhaegar were married before they had Jon. The one person who might have known was decapitated. Now, we do have some evidence that suggests Lyanna and Rhaegar were officially married before they had Jon. The story in Westeros is that Rhaegar kidnapped Lyanna, and that's what started Robert's Rebellion, but we can assume that Lyanna and Rhaegar were actually in love, and that Lyanna willingly left her home to run away with Rhaegar.
How many tens of thousands had to die because Rhaegar chose your aunt?
So Lyanna leaves Winterfell, and then she meets Rhaegar in the Riverlands, and then her and Rhaegar were escorted to Dorne by Sir Arthur Dayne. Now, if they did get married, it had to have happened before they went to Dorne, because the only place in the south with weirwood trees is the Isle of Faces, and a northern wedding is only considered binding if it's in front of a weirwood tree. The Isle of Faces is mostly left alone, and it's filled with weirwood trees, and another interesting point is Septon Maribald. This is a character that's only seen in the books, but in Season 6, Ian McShane plays a version of this character named Brother Rey. Brother Rey is a combination of two characters from the books, the Elder Brother and Septon Maribald. Maribald has been wandering around the Riverlands for decades, and one of the services he provides? Weddings. Coincidence? Probably not. Now, I want to take a look at the scene where Ned Stark confronts Arthur Dayne in Season 6. The context of this scene is that the war is over. Robert's Rebellion is over. King Aerys and Prince Rhaegar are both dead, and Ned Stark is now attempting to rescue his sister, Lyanna, who he believed to be kidnapped by Rhaegar. That's what the whole realm believed. Ned Stark questions Arthur Dayne, the former Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, to King Aerys as to why he wasn't present at the Battle of the Trident, where Rhaegar was killed by Robert Baratheon. Dayne tells him that he was ordered to guard the Tower of Joy. Now, why would the Kingsguard be ordered to protect a dying Lyanna, Rhaegar's abductee? Well, maybe that abductee is giving birth to the next Targaryen king. The Kingsguard and Arthur Dayne must believe that they are protecting their future king. If Jon was a bastard, well, bastards have no rights and no claim to the throne. Ned gives Arthur Dayne the chance to leave and go protect his queen, which would be Daenerys, or his king, Viserys. But Dayne insists on guarding the tower, which can only mean Jon is a legitimate king, and that Lyanna and Rhaegar were married before he was born. Even if Jon wasn't related to Daenerys, I think she's going to realize the threat beyond the wall is more important than conquering Westeros. Daenerys is a practical person. Really, to me, the Stark and Targaryen alliance is inevitable. We know these two characters. We know that they're practical, that they see the bigger picture. The bigger problem for Jon might be Sansa pulling a Fredo.
I'm your older brother, Mike, and I was stepped over.
That's the way Pop wanted it.
It ain't the way I wanted it! I can handle things, I'm smart! Not like everybody says! Like dumb, I'm smart, and I want respect!
I find it very hard to believe that Sansa is going to betray Jon for Littlefinger. I just can't see it happening.
No, I think they'll definitely have a bit of a rift in the beginning. Either Sansa will realize she already knows what Littlefinger is. I don't think she knows the extent to what he has done in the past.
Because she doesn't know what he did to her father.
No. maybe with some new characters heading north when they start meeting with other characters of the show that they haven't interacted before. Maybe that information gets leaked out and she finds out that Littlefinger is really the monster that he is.
Right.
Not really a monster, but the opportunist and how he'll sell anyone out.
I have only loved one woman. Only one. My entire life. Your sister.
I used to think that I could not go on, and life was nothing but a...
I mean, I love Littlefinger as a character because he's so clever, but he is a monster. He'll take out anybody to get what he wants. But Sansa's already said it to Jon Snow, like you said. Season 6, she said only a fool would trust Littlefinger. So I can't imagine that conflict between Jon and Sansa. I can't imagine anything happening because of it, that there's going to be a rift between the two characters.
They might, like, divulge a little, but I don't think it'll take up too much of the story, because there's not that much story left, to be honest. I think a lot of people are looking too much into that, like, a glance they shared during
right.
the Battle of the Bastards at the end when Jon's declared King of the North. Some people are looking too much into that, but I think it can be a minor plot point, but nothing that goes too extreme where Sansa is totally on Littlefinger's side against Jon's.
Do you think Littlefinger kicks the can in Season 7?
I hope not. He's such a great character for the show.
13 episodes left. The show is going away from the politics. It's becoming the fantasy epic rather than the political drama. I don't see what role Littlefinger plays moving forward, besides trying to convince Sansa, listen, this king, your half-brother, doesn't deserve the throne. You're a Stark. You have the Stark blood. That should be you.
Well, I feel like his goal the whole time has been to get the North behind Sansa and then...
And then invaded King's Landing.
With the Vale, with
right.
the Riverlands,
but there's
the
no
North.
Time for any of that.
No, it's not. So I think that's still going to be his plan. I think his plans will get foiled before, because I don't see him going north to fight the White Walkers.
No, right. But they need the Vale. The best way to secure the Vale is to take out Littlefinger. If Sansa and Jon get on the same page...
Well, the Lords of the Vale, I think, don't trust Littlefinger as much either.
Yeah.
And if something happens to Robin Arryn, even with Robin Arryn, she's very friendly with Sansa. The
yes.
Lords of the Vale love the Starks as well.
Right.
I mentioned that in Season 5.
This storyline plays out so much better in the books. It's a shame what they did in the show, how they dumbed down Littlefinger's character.
Yeah, I mean...
I do think he's going to kick the can, though. I think this is it.
Definitely before, I think, they go north. So whether that's this the end of this season or the beginning of Season 8.
Now, I was reading something recently which brings up a great point. It wasn't shown in the show, but it was in the books when Rob makes his will and he leaves Winterfell to Jon. And Catelyn told him, listen...
Allegedly to Jon.
Well, Catelyn was always said that we can't trust Jon because he's a bastard and he'll try to usurp the seat at Winterfell from a trueborn Stark. She was kind of right. Jon just sat there while he was declared King of the North and took the throne away from a trueborn Stark, Sansa. So wasn't Catelyn technically right?
Jon, it's not really his intentions. I think he just...
King of the North, hey, if you guys are saying it, you know.
He can be King of the North and Sansa still be the Lady of Winterfell. If you want to speak technically, then Bran
right.
comes to the North. Let's see how he works with that situation.
Well, I don't think Bran is going to care. But it's interesting if they'll bring it up, if Jon will acknowledge... I'm the King of the North, but it should be Bran.
Yeah, and then I don't think Bran will take it. I think he feels his duty now is as a three-eyed raven.
Right.
But I also don't think Bran's going to be in a tree for the rest of his life. So maybe he might be Lord of Winterfell, or he may be King of the North, while Jon, you know, when he realizes who he really is, goes with Daenerys down south.
Yeah, Bran, Sansa, I mean, I think Jon is going to keep the throne in Season 7. The only person I can see taking it from him is the guy up north who can bring people back from the dead. My boy Coldemort. So far, in the first 60 episodes of Game of Thrones, the Night's King has only appeared in 3 episodes. Season 4, Episode 4, Oathkeeper, where he turns Craster's last son into a White Walker. Season 5, Episode 8, Hardhome, overlooking the battle between the living and the dead. And then raising thousands of fallen wildlings to join his army. And recently, he appeared in Season 6, Episode 5, Home. After warging into a weirwood tree, Bran Stark scouts the army of the dead, and comes face to face with the Night's King. The Night's King also leads an attack on the Three-Eyed Raven's cave during the episode's climax. It is unknown how powerful the Night's King is, but we can assume the size of his undead army. Before Hardhome, the Night's King commanded a sizable force, and now the Army of the Dead consists of tens of thousands of wildlings that refused to join the Night's Watch before the battle at Hardhome. The Walkers can resurrect humans and animals, so it's possible that they have resurrected mammoths, giants, and other magical creatures from beyond the wall. Their command initially consists of 13 White Walkers that we see in Season 4, Episode 4, Oathkeeper. Not including the White Walker that Sam kills in Season 3, the 13 Walkers stand by while the Night's King turns Craster's son into a White Walker. Two of the White Walkers have been killed since, one by Jon Snow in Season 5, and the other by Mira Reed in Season 6. So the current count is 11 White Walkers, but they have been transforming Craster's sons into Walkers for dozens of years, generations, so it's unknown how many White Walkers there truly are. Since Season 4, we have only seen four together at a time, including the Night's King. Unless the showrunners plan to alter their continuity, we should see more than just the four horsemen of the Winter Apocalypse moving forward. The White Walkers have shown the magical ability to manipulate cold environments. Their presence is usually accompanied by blizzards and the dropping of temperatures. They can freeze anything they come in contact with. Weapons, swords, humans, to the point of shattering them. They possess superhuman strength and can easily toss a grown man with a single blow. They wield swords and spears made from ice crystals that can instantly shatter any blade they come in contact with. And we all know their ability to raise the dead as their servants. While they may seem unbeatable, they do have their weaknesses. They are killed instantly when struck with weapons made of dragonglass or Valyrian steel. The problem is that dragonglass and Valyrian steel are in short supply, with only a few dozen Valyrian steel swords still in existence. The dragonglass that the Night's Watch had was lost at Hardhome. While the Whites can be killed by normal weapons and fire, the Walkers appear to be resistant to fire due to the extreme cold that radiates off their bodies, which can snuff out any flame that they approach. Another major weakness for the White Walkers may be dragons, and more specifically, dragon fire. Valyrian steel and dragonglass are believed to be made with the use of dragon fire, and are the only two weapons that can kill a White Walker. So while the Walkers appear to be resistant to fire, dragon fire may be able to permanently destroy their bodies. The one thing that stands in the way of war between the living and the dead is the wall. Constructed as a magical barrier between the living and the dead, nothing undead can pass through it, making it impossible for the Walkers to conquer the Seven Kingdoms. Until that wall is torn down. Mr. Bran Stark, tear down that wall. One magical item that hasn't been introduced in the show, technically it hasn't been introduced in the books either, is the Horn of Winter. It is talked about but never seen. Known as the Horn of Joramun, it is a magical horn that belonged to the former king beyond the wall. It is believed that Joramun blew the horn and woke giants from the earth, and the wildlings believe that blowing the horn can bring down the wall. In the Song of Ice and Fire novels, Mance Rayder claims to possess the horn, but it was later revealed to be a fake. Now, there was also a horn that was discovered by Sam in the Black Cloak of Dragonglass from Season 2. In the books, this horn is discovered by Jon Snow. It's called the Old Warhorn. And there are theories that it could be the Horn of Winter, but this was probably just an Easter egg for the fans. Most characters are skeptical of the horn's existence, even the Northerners. And while I don't think it will be introduced in Season 7 or Season 8, I do believe the wall will come down at the end of Season 7. The battle between the living and the dead is inevitable. It's what the books and the show have been teasing since the very first chapter and episode, so the wall must go. The wall will come down because of the mark of the Night's King. Once again, Bran is fucking up everything. Poor Bran. He never asked to be thrown out of a window. If only someone had warned him.
No more climbing.
The Mark of the Night's King allowed the Walkers to bypass the Three-Eyed Raven's magical defenses at his hidden cave. I think it's safe to assume that Bran will return to Winterfell after learning of Jon Snow's victory against Ramsay Bolton, because he will try to assist him in his fight against the Night's King. And when he passes under the wall, the magical barrier will be broken. The Walkers will be allowed to pass.
Listen, we're going to build a fantastic wall, and we're going to get the White Walkers to pay for it.
I think what most fans don't realize about the Night's King is that he's only been in three episodes. He's never in the show. Feels like such a big character, this big shadow, because of what we saw at Hardhome. Now, I don't know how many episodes we're going to get of him in Season 7. I remember for preview for Season 6, I'm like, oh, he's going to be in like four episodes for Season 6. But I think we could see him in two or three episodes.
Yeah, I don't think we're really going to actually see him in as a main antagonist until probably season 8, when it's just coming down to the end. Maybe a couple flashbacks like we got to see with the Children of the Forest, things like that, more often than him in real time.
Yeah, we might see him as a man, because in the books, it's believed that the Night's King was originally Lord Commander at the Night's Watch, and then he fell in love with the White Walker.
Well, it's Night King and Night's King. A lot of people say they're different characters, it's a different thing. There's no Night King in the books, it's a Night's King.
You think the show, they'll go the route that he fell in love with one of the Children of the Forest?
I don't think they're going
to
get...
Well, because remember the Children of the Forest tied him up to the tree and created him as the first White Walker? That he was tricked by the Children of the Forest? Because he is a man.
Yeah.
He's one of the first men.
Well, in the books...
Do you think they'll go into that backstory for the show?
Totally new backstory?
Well, the one that they've established in the show, yeah.
I think they just showed it as, like, to give more understanding of where they came from. I really don't think they're going to dive too much into it.
That was one of my least favorite parts of season 6. I thought they should have just kept it a mystery.
Yeah.
Never explained.
Yeah, I think they're just going to, maybe the first attack, the first threat, like the first time they were actually a threat to the Westeros and why they built the wall. So, and I think they'll show him just gathering his army, marching on the wall as well.
Do you think that war starts in season 7 or they leave it all for season 8?
It'll probably just be a cliffhanger heading into season 8.
Yeah, you
eight.
Think so.
There's plenty of whites out there. How many White Walkers do you think there actually are, though?
The count right now is 11 that we've seen, because we see 13 when Craster's son is being turned into a White Walker. Okay. Two have been killed since that, one by Jon, one by Mira.
And one that is Craster's son.
But you have to assume that they've been turning Craster's sons into White Walkers for generations, because when we see Craster, he's an old man. He has wives who are grown women.
Well, I don't think they have to show them all now. I think you can... Just think of it as like a normal like a situation like they would have... At a ceremony like that, not all of them are going to be there, probably their top guns.
Right.
And then they have their top four going out for the missions at Hardhome and things like that, going to
the Three-Eyed Ravens Cave.
Off screen, there could be others going around getting other undead to join their army, stuff like that.
So, I hope so.
Yeah, I would be disappointed.
Because I don't want to just see four. Because we've only seen four since that season 3 episode with Craster's son.
I do think there'll be a number of them. Otherwise, it won't really be...
Four White Walkers. Because the Whites... They're just an army. You can kill them with weapons and then you burn them. I mean, there's a lot of them. It's a big army, but the threat is the White Walkers. So
realistically, you could just kill the four White Walkers first and then you don't have to worry about the undead coming back.
Right. If there's four White Walkers and you have one Valyrian steel sword, it's really not that big of a threat.
I'm sure Jon taking
him
out.
Oh, yeah. He can dance through all four of them, you know, just bobbing and weaving. But if there's like 30...
Because all you have to do is just take a bunch of... Dragon glass arrows.
Yeah, the arrows. Yeah.
Launch them at him.
Right.
I would say there has to be like at least a couple hundred.
And I think
even more, really.
It would be, well, it depends on budget, too. And the thing with the White Walkers is they seem to be more guerrilla warfare, while the Whites are, you know, line them up and let them attack. But the Walkers are sneaky. First scene of the show where it's like a guerrilla warfare tactic.
Everything we hear about them is the White Walkers. They have the Army of the Dead, but the White Walkers are the real threat.
Right.
So if it's not a substantial amount, then I don't think it's that big of a threat. Especially if you get all this dragon's glass from Dragonstone and all these Valyrian swords out there.
And if the dragons are going to fight them too, you want the dragons to be evenly matched.
Yeah.
You just don't want them to bulldoze over the White Walkers. Maybe for budget reasons that there's only like 10 of them, but they make them stronger than they are in the books.
Okay.
So they can match up with the dragons. But we've already seen, it's already canon, it's in the continuity, that Jon Snow was able to slice through one with a sword and he died. Sam killed one with a dragon glass dagger, Mira killed one with a spear. There's not a lot of Valyrian steel and dragon glass, but they can be easily killed if you have these weapons.
Sam has his families
right
now.
I would prefer them to have about like 100 White Walkers, like you said, because that would be
but
awesome.
But like fucking jumping 20 feet in the air, coming
yeah,
down
right,
and
right
taking out.
Because we've seen them with the super strength.
Yeah.
Like I want to see them rip through people.
Yeah.
In Hardhome specifically, the lieutenant that Jon kills, it looks like he was just underestimating them, that they toy with them because they don't believe that they can be killed.
Yeah.
And then when he actually kills him, you see the Night's King glance down at him like...
They should be as powerful.
Can he do
like,
that?
Where 100 White Walkers should be able to take out at least like 10,000 men. Something like crazy like that for them to be as formidable as they've been built up to be. Because if the threat is the Whites more than the White Walkers, then...
Over under 50%, you think we get a Jon Snow Night's King confrontation season 7? I'd say under.
I'd say over.
Yeah?
The show loves to show, like, even if they're not...
They love to tease us.
Yeah, they love to show some, like, epic moments that are... Sometimes they don't hit on them, but when they do, they're fantastic. I do think they would try, like, aesthetically pleasing, cool shit that will make fans go crazy.
So I think Bran is going to go south of the wall. Do you think he'll return to Winterfell? Because I'm assuming that he has to relay some information to Jon. Because he's going to learn about the battle between Jon and Ramsay. He's going to learn that the Starks have retaken Winterfell. He's going to know it's not necessarily a safe haven, but it's somewhere where he will be protected. And there's plenty of weirwood trees in Winterfell.
Yeah, I believe he'll end up at the wall, gain passage through the wall, and then...
Now, as for his powers, him passing the wall, we'll start with that. Do you think him coming past the wall, because Benjen Stark says, I can't pass the wall because I'm dead, and nothing dead can pass. But we see the mark of the Night's King on Bran. This is what allowed the Night's King to attack the Three-Eyed Raven's cave. Do you think Bran coming south of the wall allows the walkers to pass the wall? That it won't necessarily have to fall, they'll just, you know, walk right through.
Yeah, I think so. And if you're Bran, I mean... I think you had to think about that too, right?
Right.
Before you pass the wall.
Well, they're going to dumb him down and...
Because they haven't introduced like any kind of horn like in the books.
Right, the Horn of Winter.
Something that would bring down the wall like that. So I do think they might use that to allow the White Walkers to pass. But I would much rather see the wall come down. I think that just visually would be awesome. And
crumbling, and then the Night's King is on the other side. That's the final shot of Season 7.
That would be so amazing. I do hope something like that does happen. But yeah, I think Bran's story will take him to Winterfell.
Now, I believe that Bran is going to be the one who breaks the news to Jon Snow that, hey, you're a Stark and a Targaryen. You think he's going to use a vision to show him that he's going to bring him to the moment of his birth, possibly show him the wedding between his two parents? Because that's the key. Did Lyanna and Rhaegar get married?
Yeah, there's going to have to be some concrete proof before people actually start believing that this is actually true. So either through a vision or something in the crypts you could take him to, or...
What do they say is in the crypts? Rhaegar's...
Harp.
Harp, right.
That's like a theory going around that it's in Lyanna's tomb, but...
That seems too far-fetched.
I think visually, too, to like the audience... Who is not all hardcore fans, that vision of like a wedding ceremony or just like a secret marriage going on.
Because the two people he has to convince are Jon and Daenerys. That's really the only two people who matter. Because if Daenerys, with all her dragons, all her power, is saying, this is my nephew, people are going to be like, okay, fine. You know, whatever. Anybody could be your nephew. Just don't burn me alive. I think through a vision, he's going to take them back. In terms of his warging, you know, everybody goes back to the line, you will fly. Do you think he wargs into a dragon in Season 7? Because it seems that you have to be an extremely powerful warg to warg into a dragon. The best accomplishment he has is Hodor. You know, Hodor's got half a mind.
Yeah, R.I.P. When I read the books, I never thought that he would actually warg a dragon. But I think in the show, that's something that they would do. You know, cinematically, it just looks cool. Bran, build him up as his all-powerful character.
Right.
For him finally just to warg a dragon and control it, that looks so much better.
I've read that if a dragon falls and then the Night's King resurrects it, that's when Bran will warg into the dragon to make sure that the Night's King can't control it. But I think in this season that Bran is going to focus on his visions of how the First Men defeated the White Walkers.
Yeah, his powers are very... You know, we don't really know
too very vague.
Much. I'd rather him use what he has now, his visions and things like that, to get an idea of what's coming and how to stop it, rather than him being able to, like, full Professor X people, you know?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So I like to keep it a little bit more just to his visions and gaining
knowledge. I think there's
going to
be a lot of visions in Season 7. I think we're going to see a lot of what happened when the wall first went up. I think we're going to see the first White Walkers. I don't think we're going to get an idea of how they defeated them, but we're going to get some necessary information on how they can be defeated now. Valyrian steel, how can we make it? Where's Dragonglass? Where can we acquire these
weapons? Well, I
think
it's going to be a lot with Dragonstone. Stannis and said, I think, to Jon in Season 4 or 5 that it's filled with Dragonglass. So.
Right.
That's going to be another key part in that. So
now, we've seen from the set photos Jon and Daenerys meeting at Dragonstone. So that meeting could... be almost informal, that Jon and his crew, him and Davos, were going to Dragonstone to mine the Dragonglass, and then it turns out that, you know, the Dragon Queen is already staying there.
Well, I think they'll know, so I guess they'll, I mean, if you hear that a Dragon Queen with three huge dragons, and if she is now at the place where we need Dragonglass, the tool that kills the White Walkers,
right,
you're going to go there to try to treat with them, to say, hey, we have this threat coming, we need Dragonglass, and, you know, three dragons wouldn't hurt either.
Hey, man, if we can, you know, borrow one of them. I'm your nephew.
What was that?
See, that's why I think Bran is going to be the key there, too, because not only does he have to convince Daenerys that Jon is a Targaryen, but he has to convince her that there's a threat up north. She has no idea of the White Walkers.
There's always a possibility that just no one...
It seems too big. Like, that was one of the problems I had with Season 6, is that Jon Snow gets resurrected and everybody's like, oh, cool. But in terms of the effect on the rest of the cast, nobody knew if he died or was resurrected. Only Sansa.
Well, the main reasoning for that was just so he can break his vow and...
Yeah, I guess so.
Have his story but go.
It seems such a big moment became so insignificant as season 6 went forward. That in the books, it's going to be a much bigger revelation when he is resurrected. I hope that they don't just disregard his parentage. He's a Targaryen. Okay, let's move on. At least Daenerys. I want her to find out.
I don't think that will happen because they spent a good amount of time of Bran's flashbacks to reveal that to the audience. So for it not to mean anything would kind of be a bit of a waste. I do think it will play a part and people will find out, but there's always just that maybe Jon might die before something is revealed or...
Don't say that. Don't. Don't even say it. Arya is a character that, it's like Tyrion in season 6. I remember when we were previewing for season 6, we really didn't know what Tyrion was going to do. And looking back, he really didn't do much.
No.
It's hard to say what Arya is going to do in season 7. Does she just go back to Winterfell and she just joins the crew and she's part of the all-star team that fights the White Walkers? Or is she going to go back to her kill list? Because there are still some names, Cersei, the Hound.
I think she removed them. The Mountain.
And then you look back in season 2 when Melisandre said, "We will meet again."
Yeah, right now she's in the Riverlands, so he's going north or south from there, right?
Right.
When she finally realized, when she says, "I am Arya Stark of Winterfell," at the end when she leaves Jack, and she wants to be herself again. So I do think the way to do that is to return home. So I'm sure she knows about the Battle of the Bastards, probably all the hubbub in Westeros right now.
Right.
So
you think she's going to reunite with the Hound? Maybe they travel north together, the Brotherhood and
the Hound's going north, right?
Right.
Melisandre's going south, so maybe they can run into each other.
Well, I don't think Melisandre is going to go too south.
Stick around a little.
Yeah, she's going to be like behind the corner, like looking at Jon.
She might
be stalking
him. She might even team up with the Brotherhood.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think that's what's going to happen with Arya, that she's going to meet up with the Brotherhood and then they're going to travel north together.
Well, the Red Woman, she's kind of on her list. She was on the list and she didn't say it in season 6
right.
During her training.
I feel like Melisandre has something else to do. I feel like there's something missing from Melisandre's arc, because the whole reveal that she's this old woman, she's this old witch that has seen all this history, they're going to go back to that in season 7, but I'm not sure how.
Yeah, so I think the only two people, because they kind of left out the Red Woman, I think it's just Cersei and the Mountain. Good luck with that, Arya. I don't think you can take that guy down.
A lot of people think Arya is going to kill Cersei. I don't see her going south at all.
I don't think her killing Cersei. It's not like she killed everyone on her list up until now, so it's not like she's like 7 for 7. Needs to go 9 for 9. I do think she'll head north to kind of become herself again with her family, and then Cersei will be left to either Tyrion or Jaime to kill.
I can't wait for that reunion between Arya and Jon Snow. If one of them dies before they see each other, I will be so pissed.
They were the big two. Yeah. Still got Needle.
One of the saddest scenes is when Arya is training to become a faceless man, and Jaqen tells her, get rid of all your personal stuff, and she can't throw away Needle, and then the Stark theme plays in the background. Kills me every time I see it.
A lot of speculations that Nymeria might come back into the fold.
On the part of the showrunners, that would be dumb, because I don't think there's any basis for it. In the books, yes, because she has this psychological connection, because she is a warg.
Well, and you always see, like, in random chapters how you hear people talking about this massive wolf pack led
right.
by a she-wolf.
And Arya also has the wolf dreams, where she's dreaming as a wolf in
well,
the north.
Well, she's the one that finds Lady Stoneheart in the river
right,
and pulls
right.
her out as Nymeria. I think they might try to include something with the Nymeria and this big wolf pack.
It almost seems like fan service. What are the chances that Nymeria and Arya would reunite?
They have a connection. All Starks have a connection
yeah,
with the wolf.
Yeah, I guess
just
so.
Like Daenerys has a connection with the dragons.
Maybe.
Drogon found her pretty fast.
Would you want? I kind of don't even want to see it.
Well, you know, you take away some direwolves. I need another one. It's Ghost.
Hey, it's her and Ghost.
Yeah.
It's her and Ghost. I've read some things about Arya and Sansa, that there may be a rift between the two characters, depending on how much Arya knows about Littlefinger. I don't think Arya knew that Littlefinger was behind Ned being executed.
She was training with Syrio during when that happened.
Right.
When Ned got taken by Littlefinger.
Right.
She may have picked it up. She was traveling with the Hound a lot. Not really sure.
It's hard to tell, right?
She might have picked it up throughout the time.
Yeah, that's what I've read, that there's going to be a conflict between Arya and Sansa, because Sansa has put all this trust into Littlefinger, and Arya's going to be like, "Listen, dingbat, your head was in the clouds while all this was happening. I was in the fucking trenches, man. I was squaring up with Syrio. I was listening in the dungeons." It's really hard to tell what Arya is going to do. I think her role is going to be diminished to a faceless man on the side of the Starks. Her arc, her personal arc, is coming to an end. One of the most exciting additions to the Season 7 cast is Jim Broadbent, a veteran English actor, an Academy Award winner, and former Hogwarts professor.
Merlin's beard! No need to disfigure me, Albus.
Jim Broadbent joins the growing list of Harry Potter actors who have appeared in Game of Thrones, and fans are now speculating on who he will be playing. The character he was casted as has been described as a venerable priest with moral authority and gravitas. Jim Broadbent recently commented on his casting, saying, "I'm playing a maester, an archmaester. I'm an old professor character. I did 5 episodes. I did sort of one major scene in each episode." The best guess as to which maester he is portraying is Archmaester Marwyn of the Citadel, a character that is yet to be seen in the show, but he was briefly mentioned in Season 6, Episode 10, The Winds of Winter.
This is irregular.
Yes, well, I suppose that life is irregular.
The Archmaester will discuss these irregularities with you.
Marwyn has been mentioned in several of the books, but hadn't made an appearance until the 4th novel, A Feast for Crows, during a meeting with Samwell Tarly at the Citadel. Marwyn listens to Samwell's story about Daenerys' dragons and White Walkers, and all the other crazy shit happening in the world. Marwyn then declares that he is going to aid Daenerys Targaryen on her quest to rule the Seven Kingdoms and become her maester. He demands that Sam tell no one about the dragons, quickly finish his studies, and then return to the Wall to aid the Night's Watch. Nicknamed Marwyn the Mage, Archmaester Marwyn is known as an outsider in the Citadel, someone who believes in many curious things. In the 3rd A Song of Ice and Fire novel, A Storm of Swords, Qyburn explains to Jaime why he believes in ghosts, and that of all the Archmaesters at the Citadel, Marwyn is the only one who gives the matter any thought. It is rumored that he spends his time with actors, singers, sellswords, and beggars, keeping the company of both whores and hedge wizards, and making sacrifices to queer gods. He has traveled across the 2 continents, mapping distant and unknown lands, searching for lost books, and studying with warlocks and shadowbinders, eventually authoring the Book of Lost Books. It is even rumored that he has killed a man with his own hands. Can you imagine Jim Broadbent doing that? If Jim Broadbent is playing Archmaester Marwyn, it could confirm the validity of one popular Game of Thrones theory, the Grand Maester Conspiracy. The Grand Maester Conspiracy is a theory that the Maesters of the Citadel have been secretly destroying all traces of magic and sorcery in Westeros for hundreds of years, starting with the Targaryen dragons. The Maesters had been counseling the Targaryens since the end of Aegon's conquest, and eventually convinced them to confine their dragons into captivity, which lead to their extinction.
Dragons do not do well in captivity.
How do you know this?
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
In A Feast for Crows, Marwyn insinuates that the Maesters killed the dragons in his conversation with Sam. Who do you think killed all the dragons the last time around? The world the Citadel is building has no place in it for sorcery or prophecy or glass candles, much less dragons. Maester Luwin, counselor to the Starks and one of the few Maesters who studied magic, repeatedly tells Bran that magic no longer exists in the world.
Maybe magic once was a mighty force in the world. Not anymore. The dragons are gone. The giants are dead. And the children of the forest forgotten.
It's unknown if Luwin was actually in on the conspiracy. We don't know if the conspiracy is true, but the Maesters are basically scientists, men of logic and reason, who see magic as a threat to civilized society. Sorcery, prophecy, dragons, all of these mysticisms and magical creatures usually lead to war and death. Even Archmaester Marwyn says that prophecy will bite your prick off every time. Because of his belief in magic and sorcery, Marwyn is shunned by his fellow Maesters, hence the nickname Marwyn the Mage. He says, like Aemon Targaryen, he cannot be trusted by the Citadel. Aemon because he was a Targaryen, and Marwyn because of his personal beliefs in the power of magic. In fact, Marwyn actually could be considered a true mage. It's possible that he is one of the only people to light a glass candle in over 100 years. The magical glass candles and its power have been referenced several times in the books. Zaros on Daxos tells Daenerys that the glass candles are burning in the house of Yorathon Nightwalker that have not burned in 100 years. And during one of her mysterious visions, Quaithe tells Daenerys that the glass candles are burning. The glass candles were brought to the Citadel from Valyria 1,000 years before the Doom. They are described as being tall and twisted, with sharp edges, and give off an unpleasantly bright light that can alter certain colors. White becomes as bright as snow, yellow shines like gold, red turns to flame, and shadows become so black that they look like holes in the world. The powers of the glass candle are unknown since they haven't burned in hundreds of years, but it is believed that sorcerers can use them to see across mountains, seas, and deserts, give men visions and dreams, and the ability to communicate with people from the other side of the world. Before an acolyte of the Citadel can become an official maester, he must spend an entire night alone in a room full of darkness. The room contains 3 black candles, and unless he can light the candles, he will spend the night in total darkness. It's a ritual that is supposed to show that great knowledge cannot solve every problem. It appears that Morwen the Mage is the one maester who has figured out how to light the glass candles. When Sam walks into Morwen's study, there is a black glass candle burning. After Samwell arrives in Old Town, Morwen instructs Alaras, one of the novices studying at the Citadel, to bring Sam to his study. When Sam asks them how they knew he was coming, Alaras points to the glass candle. So it appears that whoever wields a glass candle can become sort of omnipresent. It is believed that Quaithe, the Shadowbinder from Asai, has been using a glass candle to communicate with Daenerys. In A Dance with Dragons, Quaithe appears to Daenerys in the Pyramid of Meereen. Daenerys asks her how she got past her guards, and Quaithe replies that she came another way, and that the guards never saw her. She tells Daenerys to be wary of those she will soon encounter. So it would appear that Quaithe is using the glass candle to see into the future, because everything in this prophecy comes true. In the show, Quaithe has only appeared in 2 episodes, The Ghost of Harrenhal and A Man Without Honor, both in season 2. So it is not proven that glass candles exist in the show. If Jim Broadbent is playing Archmaester Morwen, which I believe he is, we may see the glass candles introduced in Season 7 either as an Easter egg or a major plot point. If they are introduced, Morwen may teach Sam how to use the glass candles, which can help him relay any information he discovers about the White Walkers. Maybe this is how Sam discovers how to create Valyrian steel by using the candle. He can go into the past, see how these weapons were forged, and then use that knowledge to give Jon Snow a fighting chance against the White Walkers. It all depends on how powerful they are. In the past, the show has been reluctant to introduce certain magical items and subplots from the novels, so Maester Morwen may only serve as a mentor towards Sam. We may see a different incarnation of this character. He might not even be named Morwen. We know the show likes to change names of characters and things. The Salt Throne. What? As one of the few maesters who still believes in the power of magic, Morwen may provide Sam with vital information on how to defeat the White Walkers, and he may eventually want to join Daenerys Targaryen after hearing of her dragons, like he does in A Feast for Crows. Hey guys, thanks for watching. If you're watching this far, then you're awesome. If you like this video, hit the thumbs up button, leave a comment, tell us about your Game of Thrones theories and what you think these characters are going to do. And if you didn't like the video, make sure you leave a mean comment. Meanest comment. We're doing a giveaway for the meanest comment. No, we're not. For part 3, we're going to talk about more of the supporting characters, the Greyjoys, the Brotherhood, Melisandre. We're going to talk about how the battle will be fought between the living and the dead. It's going to be more of a discussion preview. And if you like listening to our videos without watching the terrible animation, you can listen to our podcast, which is going up on iTunes. It should be up in a couple of days, so check that out. And I want to tell you guys about the next big video we have planned. We're doing a sort of Ghost in the Shell, Westworld, Ex Machina, compare and contrast, philosophical discussion about how these movies define consciousness. It was suggested by one of the commenters on my Ghost in the Shell review, and I thought it was just a brilliant idea. So if you want to watch 3 pseudo-intellectuals try and break down these movies, definitely check that out. That's coming in the next couple of weeks. And if you're watching this far into the video, God bless you, because what the hell?